I'm Sky Cooley.
And I'm Andrew Abernathy. And welcome to the Oddfellows Podcast, a podcast where we talk about transdisciplinary research and what it means at OSU and beyond.
All right. Andrew, so we're here Thanksgiving, getting ready for the Thanksgiving break. I'm assuming by the time people are listening to this, they'll probably have already had their Thanksgiving meal. What's your favorite Thanksgiving food, Thanksgiving tradition?
That's hard to say. My favorite Thanksgiving tradition is, I went to the University of Mississippi, also known Ole Miss. My favorite Thanksgiving tradition is watching the Egg Bowl. I know there's a little animosity there as a former faculty member at Mississippi State,
yeah.
But it is we may have different goals on that, but that's my favorite tradition, is watching the Egg Bowls. That
nice.
and a giant bowl of mashed potatoes.
We cook gumbo for
Ooh,
our Thanksgiving.
Yeah.
I'm from Louisiana, so getting a good, the turkey's great. We do that. They do the Cajun injection. We fry it. But if I don't have the gumbo, it just doesn't feel right to me. I have to have that.
I make a mean gumbo with the leftovers from Thanksgiving.
You do make a good gumbo.
It works. Yeah.
It does work.
Yeah. Well, before we go, you have an opinion. How to cook a turkey? Do you fry it? Do you roast it?
I fry it. I mean, I feel like, honestly, the bird gets too dry to me. I cook a lot. You know I like to cook.
Right.
And I feel like for chicken, you can roast a chicken. I typically take a Dutch oven, get the oven like super hot, 500, drop the chicken in. Well, I put the Dutch oven in the oven, then take it out once it gets hot, drop the chicken in, close it, put it in there. But when you do that same method with the turkey, it's dry, man. I don't know what else to say. You got to fry that turkey.
See, I like to roast it, but it's all about the brine. It's all
about
the brine. It's about
a wet
brine. But since we're deadlocked here, we're going to have to ask Keith.
Keith, coming in. What are your Thanksgiving traditions? How do you like your turkey?
It's pretty traditional, actually, so it's not too exciting. Turkey is usually roasted.
Okay, all right. You guys like to roast the turkey. I'm glad that we've got Keith mic'd up now. He's always a part of the show here with us, so like now that you get to like actually voice in. And Keith, please jump in on any of this as we go through it. So today we're going to be talking with Dr. Steph Link. Really great program that we're going to discuss, Dosimity. And when you guys hear about this out there, really, encourage your students to use this. Encourage other faculty, other universities to use it. It is such a cool platform. Really excited about that conversation. And then I cannot wait to geek out. We have Anagret Asi coming in from the women's basketball team.
Number four.
I mean, listen, Andrew and I are huge fans. We've been going to like every game starting last season. And she is really a class act. Can't wait to talk to her and just see what all she's got going on, what the season is in store for them. Before we jump into our first interview, though, I do want to mention to everybody that Pivot is officially here. CAS leadership has really worked hard on getting this and making it available. And it's not just available to faculty. It's also available to students and staff. If you've got an OSU email account, basically you can use this. And it's a way of finding grants. It's a way of finding funding for your research, for the projects that you're interested in. There's opportunities that can be sorted for students, graduate students, postdocs, you name it. You can find funding for it there on Pivot. And that's pivot.proquest.com is where you can find that.
All right. Well, next we will talk with Dr. Steph Link about Dosimity.
All right, today we are thrilled to welcome Dr. Steph Link, who is really a pioneering force in academic writing technology and an associate professor here at OSU. As a first-generation Asian Cuban American and first-generation college student, she transformed her own personal struggles with academic language into really novel solutions for future generation researchers. After completing her PhD in applied linguistics and technology at Iowa State University in 2015, Dr. Link joined Oklahoma State University, where she now serves as director of graduate studies and is the former director of the International Composition Program. She has an incredibly impressive portfolio, including roles like the series editor for Advances in Call Research and Practices book series. But what truly sets Dr. Link apart is her innovative approach to making the academic writing process more accessible. And today we'll be diving into her groundbreaking project, Dosimity, which is a web-based platform designed to help early career researchers navigate the complex world of academic publishing. Right now, over 500 OSU students are already benefiting from this technology. It's backed by major NSF funding, and I really want to welcome you, Steph, to the podcast. Thanks for coming on with us.
Awesome. Thank you for that introduction.
Absolutely. Yeah, really impressed by all the work that you've done. It's really fantastic, and can't wait to have the conversation with you about Dosimity.
Yeah, I'm excited to be here.
Okay, Steph, now this podcast is going to be coming out around Thanksgiving. So I'm going to ask you, what is your favorite Thanksgiving dish?
Oh, goodness. This is really funny because, as Sky mentioned, I come from an Asian-Cuban household, and so whenever we had Thanksgiving, it was definitely not the typical. We would always have, you know, the turkey, of course, but my mom makes the best spring rolls.
Oh, okay.
And so, I mean, whenever we have any sort of occasion, you can guarantee that we're going to have these spring rolls. So we're frying up spring rolls in the house, smelling up the whole house, but then ultimately enjoying that with some sweet and sour sauce and some lettuce. So that's a typical, you know, Thanksgiving dish, I guess you can say, for us. But yeah, it's something that we always remember from growing up.
I love it. I want spring rolls at Thanksgiving.
Me too.
That sounds great.
Fusion of Asian Cuban has to be amazing, right? Like the food. Awesome.
I'm just sitting here thinking about it now. It's probably, I don't know what those dishes are, but I want them. They sound delicious.
Yeah, I'm thinking like a Cuban sandwich somehow with like a spicy Asian sauce or something. Anyway, don't get lost on that too much.
Sorry, we could go down.
We jumped into odd questions.
So Steph, you are an applied linguist.
Yes.
Okay. Can you tell for our listeners, what is applied linguistics?
You know, that's an awesome question, because oftentimes when you think about linguistics, you think about, well, you must know a lot of languages. I always get that question, how many languages do you know? But really, the foundation of applied linguist is to understand how to study languages for solving real-world problems. Right. So if you think about every day when we're going out on the street or coming to work or going to school, we see language all over, whether it's written language or spoken language or, you know, non-linguistic. So like my hands usage right now that people, you know, watching this podcast wouldn't be able to see, but I'm using it to express my excitement about applied linguistics. That's language, because we use it to communicate and to create meaning. This podcast, videos, symbols, pictures, this is all language. And as an applied linguist, we study that language in its social-cultural context in order to understand what are the main problems that create communication issues or create problems that we experience every day. From a study of the language, an applied linguist will take solutions that will help to address those problems. So thinking about society's grand challenges, a linguist would approach that from understanding the language in its context. So how that applies to me? Well, I focus on the study of language and writing. So that's not only textual, that's multimodal writing. So bringing in different modes of communicating, again, like visuals and audio and video, to present information to a target audience. But I do that within the realm of either second language learners. So I come from a background where second language learning is kind of at the heart of who I am as a scholar because of my upbringing. But I also focus on scientific communication, which I think we're going to talk a lot about today.
Yeah, it reminds me a little bit of work by Miskimon, who looks at political ontologies and looks at the way people are talking about systems and structure and policies and trying to find common ground. And it's so fascinating because another person that I've talked to that works in this ontology space works in tech as well. And he goes in and looks at the way that businesses in all their different sections are talking about the same problems to try to see where the disconnects are and looks at technological solutions. So I think it's really fascinating that there's this tie-in or this marriage of language and technology that's emerging. That's really fascinating.
Yeah, it's definitely an interdisciplinary field where we pull from a lot of different expertise in order to understand the key problems that we are interested in. So we see a lot of that with like political discourse. And, you know, you can name it and there's language associated with it. I get asked to be in projects that are related to health, related to media spaces. I mean, language is everywhere. So an applied linguist could help you to solve some of those concerns or lingering questions.
That's awesome.
Thank you. All right. So next thing I want to ask you, as a first generation college student, how did your unique background shape your approach to academic writing and language learning?
Oh, gosh. So that's literally actually a loaded question, because it really ties back to my upbringing. And you already got like a little glimpse of my upbringing. But being a first generation college student comes from my family background. So both of my parents were refugees here to the U.S., my mom from Vietnam and my dad from Cuba. And they actually met in English class. So I told you earlier that I am an applied linguist that worked with English language learners as my core. Well, my parents were both English language learners at one time, came to the U.S. with no language, and so they met each other in English class, and then here we go, I am specializing in English language teaching. And so being a first-generation college student was really impactful because I was the first to go to college in my family, and that's largely because of, you know, not really having an understanding of the educational system in the United States, right? With my parents not having, you know, gone to school here. And that sort of built this barrier into how I could succeed, meaning I had to work really hard in order to build an understanding of not just that context of learning, but the language that you use in order to succeed in the everyday context of academia. Right. So it didn't really hit me until my graduate studies that I was lacking in the language skills because, you know, as undergrad, you can compensate through other methods, just like pure hard work and a little bit of suffering to get through so that you can graduate with a degree. I wouldn't say that I planned to, you know, go into graduate studies. It was something that was like and it ended up being a purpose that came onto my lap and said, hey, you should go into graduate studies. And I sort of found my way through some mentorship to get there. But once I got there, I felt very alone because I was required to do a lot more writing than in my undergraduate years.
Yeah.
And I didn't have, again, like those language skills, that mentorship to really be able to communicate in that space. So as I worked through my research agenda, I found that this was this niche that I really wanted to contribute to not only solve my own problems with writing, but also to help those that were also struggling, because I knew I wasn't alone.
Yeah, that's terrific. We get a lot of students in our program, really from all over the world, and you can tell that when they come in the writing standards that it's different. It's a different kind of language that academics speak.
Yeah.
It's not easy to, one, decipher, but let alone to actually mimic that and try to write in that niche language. And we see that, and that's why I'm so excited to talk about the tool. We'll get to that. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. So can you tell us about the development of your dissertation writing workshop and thesis writing workshop, and what impacts have you seen these programs make?
Yeah. So actually, when I first came to Oklahoma State University, I noticed that we had a large gap in the resources that we were providing to scientific writers. And given my background and my research area, I wanted to really come into OSU and provide this outreach to our community. And so one of those ways was developing this dissertation writing workshop that turned into also a thesis writing workshop as one avenue of getting some of my expertise into that space. But as the time went along, a lot of like the word, you know, word of mouth and ended up coming back to, well, it's really successful, but we want more. And I kept on feeling like I was being sort of pulled into multiple different spaces across all of campus. I mean, even today, I still do guest lectures in like the Spears School of Business and Vet Med all over because there's this need,
sure.
Right? And so because I was early career faculty at the time, I knew that that wasn't sustainable, right? I'm a faculty, a tenure track faculty who needs to do research, and outreach is meant to be a portion of that.
Yeah, a small one.
But I felt like I was doing the majority of my work was that outreach. So while I had my heart there, I needed to find ways to integrate my research side, which is the technology. And so that's how Disseminate came about.
Amazing. Yeah, it's a great answer. And you can see that like as a it's really a great way of like thinking of bringing what you love to do, bringing your research into that. So many junior faculty, it's really hard to say no to stuff and you get pulled in a million different directions, right? And so I think it's wonderful that you were able to not only be successful in sort of centralizing all the things that you're doing, but also like actually solving a problem and an issue.
Yeah, so when it comes to impact, while I hear all the time, I think that this workshop or that workshop should be required, or I wish that there was more people that knew about it, that's great from like the student standpoint, but I really had to find ways that it could impact my career so that I could stay here at OSU and continue to offer these resources. So by integrating this highly sought after resource of research writing opportunities and my research with, again, solving real-world problems through applications such as technology and Dissemity, I was able to blend the two, bringing my research and practice together.
Amazing.
So tell us, what exactly is Dissemity and how can it support OSU researchers?
Yeah, so Dissemity stands for Disseminating Research with Clarity. It is an intelligent tutoring system that anybody here at Oklahoma State University can log onto right now. It's a web-based service where they can go through a series of modules that will not only teach them about scientific writing, but ultimately help them to write scientific writing. So the whole system, as I said, was intelligent tutoring system. The intelligent part is that it provides automatic feedback on not only the writing of your scientific work, but your analytical reading process. So again, going back to me being like a first generation college student, I didn't know how to write very well. But the core of the reasons why I didn't know how to write is that I didn't really understand the scientific works that were published. So finding ways to be a more effective reader, to understand what we call this genre of writing, in order to then be able to produce this genre. So Dissemity is not just a writing tool, it's a reading to write tool. So that students like myself, when I was a graduate student, students like me could go in and autonomously learn about the genre of scientific writing, for example, peer-reviewed journal articles, dissertations, theses, research proposals, and we're expanding the genres as we continue to develop. But understanding the structure and organization of these genres so that eventually we can write them. That process is actually built off of years of research, decades of research in the field, and I am providing one of the first options for bringing technology into this space so that, again, students can do this in the comfort of their home.
Yeah, it's really incredible because all of us have spent time advising students that they're having difficulty making sense of what they're reading from academic tests. And I'm speaking to this on a graduate side, like when you're advising students and trying to help them write a thesis, it takes a lot of work. It's a lot of hands-on, like helping people pull knowledge, or you're throwing them out to the wolves and they really struggle on their own. This is such a great bridge for both faculty and students. And I'm excited to get our students involved in this already.
What are some common problems you observe with graduate students and their scientific writing, and how does Dissemity help them solve those problems? I'm talking, what is the nuts and bolts application for the student experience?
Yeah, again, a great question. I think that with students, actually, we know this from students because we did an NSF project where we went across the United States and we interviewed stakeholders, like potential users of Dissemity, including graduate students themselves, and we asked them, what are your major pain points? What is keeping you from, you know, completing your degree in a timely fashion, or publishing that next manuscript, or getting that next grant application out? We asked them directly, and they were telling us, a slew of different problems that they are encountering. Some of those problems are largely related to time. You know, we're all limited in time. But a lot of it was also like the cognitive aspects. Like, I just don't know what I don't know. So with Dissemity, we raise their awareness of what they know and then scaffold that awareness by providing building blocks for better understanding the conventions of writing within their discipline. So oftentimes students lack the opportunities to get feedback. Feedback, if we all know, faculty providing feedback is super time confusing. And we can go through multiple rounds of providing feedback over and over until we get to a point where we say, okay, you are ready to submit to publication. Even after that, there's more rounds of feedback, and then hopefully they're publishing. With Dissemity, we are taking it down to the core. How can we understand what is expected of me as a writer, and how can I match those expectations through the writing conventions that are specific to my field? So Dissemity will ask students or users what is their discipline and will provide feedback that is related to what we understand about the language within their field. Mm-hmm. What's really interesting about it is that if we think about scientific writing, there's actually patterns in the writing that we use in order for a scientist to talk to another scientist. So whether you're a chemist or an applied linguist or an engineer, you use similar language patterns that will help you to communicate in like a scientific research article. That's what makes it a scientific research article versus a resume. Very different genres. So Dissemity helps you to understand the genre by looking at its structure and organization and language use. In fact, I provide like a framework that will help students or other users to make this very messy writing process a little bit more easy to digest. Mm. Not to put them like into a black box, but to rather give them the tools and resources for structuring that process.
Yeah, I think structure oftentimes allows for creativity in a lot of ways once you know where the steps are. Question, is IRB one of your genres?
Yeah, well, so if you think, so anything that is used for a specific purpose, for a specific audience, is a genre. And we can understand the elements of that genre by analyzing linguistically, through textual analysis, through genre analysis. We have lots of tools to do this. And then once we understand that, we're able to teach that genre. Cool. So with IRB, oh my goodness, the patterns are consistent.
Sure.
If you understand those patterns, then you're going to be able to more effectively communicate to that audience.
Yeah.
So our IRB manager, right? The same thing happens with grant proposals. Mm. If you know your target audience, which is oftentimes the program officer and your grant officer panel, if you know what they're looking for, then you can communicate better with them. So all we need as linguists is a good sample of data or example writing so we can understand these patterns and then ultimately teach these patterns. With Dissemity and what I do, it's about training large language models to understand these patterns in order to then provide feedback when the user is using these patterns or when they need to use these patterns.
That's a brilliant use case. I mean, it's really brilliant the way that you've done this. I was going to ask about how you train the system, but that's a great answer for it.
Yeah, well, it's actually kind of interesting because when I first got my NSF grant, which I got this Partnerships for Innovation grant.
Congratulations.
Thank you. It's actually the largest, one of the largest, maybe it is the largest
grant.
Yeah,
don't
grant,
be shy, yeah.
In the English departments.
Fantastic.
Kudos, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. There's probably not a ton of NSF grants.
No, it is maybe safe to say that it's the only one that we've received.
That's amazing.
Years, for sure.
Yeah, very difficult to get those and just really impressive. I mean, when you talk about it, it's such a smart use of all such a smart use of your discipline, the AI tools that are available, and use case all combined into one. Fantastic.
Yeah. So with that grant, you know, this is actually pre-GPT era.
Okay.
I actually remember the semester in which ChatGPT came out. I was teaching a class in second language writing and technology. In the end of that class, I was teaching about how to develop chatbots.
Mm.
And so we were looking at, you know, different what we call discourse communities. So if you wanted to create a chatbot for helping in clinical sessions in the health industry, then you have to understand the language and then create a chatbot.
Sure.
And then the next week after we developed these chatbots, here we go.
Yeah.
ChatGPT came out.
Yeah.
So how that transfers to my NSF project, well, we started off in gathering lots of data, analyzing, you know, human annotating lots of research articles to understand this genre, and then training our own models to understand the genre. Now, in our next era of Dissemity, we can use GPT. Claude is actually what we're using.
Claude's excellent.
And it's already pre-trained, right? So all we need to do is think about the world of AI prompting. So the whole direction of our research lately has really shifted to how can we prompt these large language models in order to do what we want it to do. And so there's multiple generations of developing these feedback systems, and we really are one of the state of the art for this genre-based automated writing evaluation field.
It reminds me that, you know, there's so many people that are saying the new, like, prompt engineering, it really is where people need to focus in. And this is such a great example of that. Have you used Perplexity AI at all? Have you toyed around with that one?
Yes, a little bit, yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I find it to be more an academic version, equally as good as Claude in some respects, but I like Claude as well.
Yeah, so we, you know, with any research, you're always testing multiple options before you apply. So we landed on Claude, but these days, these models are drastically changing daily. Mm-hmm. And so who knows where we'll be in the future? As long as we have our AI prompting, you know, up to par, then we can do a lot in the future. Right now, we're just expanding our feedback opportunities so that users can increasingly get more feedback. I really want to emphasize that with the feedback options and looking at GPT, what we're really doing is helping the users to be more critical of their writing. Hmm. This is super important to Dosemite. I am not in the realm of text generation. I am in the area of utilizing, you know, non-generative AI options to help students or users to receive feedback, right? So this is very different from generative AI, because the user is still central. The human is still central to this whole process. They still have to be critical thinkers, to be problem solvers, to be really centralized in the writing process. But with anything, we're always looking for something that's more efficient, that can help us to develop our human skills. And so I'm all for using generative AI to support that, as long as the human is still central.
Yeah, I think that's so important. I'm one of those professors who tells my students, yeah, you can use ChatGPT, but use it to enhance your critical thinking skills, not replace them.
Yeah, learn to iterate with it. That, again, like, the iterative process is creative. I mean, those language models are in some ways an extension of your own consciousness. It's what you put into it that is what you get out. So, again, just tremendous.
Yeah, thank you.
All right, so before we finish up today, I wanted to know, are there any specific success stories you have of graduate students who use Dosemite?
There are success stories all the time. Again, like I mentioned earlier, I have students all the time saying, I wish I had this earlier. I wish I had it early. I could have a first semester master's student say, I wish I had this in my undergrad, right? So the success is broad reaching, and it's a very similar story. I wish I had this before. Because so many times we are, you know, first introduced to scientific writing, and we struggle through that first time of reading an article. If we just knew right off the bat that there are tools and strategies for really dissecting a text, then we would be better off from square one. So the success is more like a blanket success across students that continuously tell me, I benefit from Dosemite and wish I had it earlier.
So what advice do you have for faculty members who want to better support graduate students in academic writing?
Yeah, well, give them access to Dosemite.
Yes.
Tell them,
great.
Tell them to go to Dosemite.com, D-I-S-S-E-M-I-T-Y. Dosemite.com is free to OSU learners. If you're interested in expanding this opportunity to prior students that you had that are now faculty mentors, or you have incoming students, we have opportunities of also licensing Dosemite outside of OSU. In fact, we recently launched Dosemite at the University of Houston, and they have over 800 users on their campus, and their usage is growing and growing. So I continuously look for opportunities to not only grow the use of Dosemite here at OSU, but also across the country.
Amazing. I know we're going to have our graduate student club meeting this Friday, and one of the things we're going to be talking about and doing, everybody's going to be learning Dosemite and how to use it.
Yeah, well, you know, with any research, it's always opportunities to find growth in what we do. So Dosemite will continue to grow. We're looking for opportunities for advancing our modeling, for adding new features, and to make it more accessible to the users. So if you ever have any feedback about that, we would love to hear it. Nice.
And where can graduate students go if they want to get involved in a future dissertation or thesis writing workshop?
Yeah, well, there are many resources across campus that can support graduate students, including the English Department, the Writing Center, the OSU Library, and the Graduate College. The Graduate College in particular has the Monday Memo, which I know that not all students always read it. You need to read the Monday Memo. There's always many resources on there, and anything that I do with Dissemity will be promoted through the Monday Memo. You can also look at the Graduate College Canvas page. They have resources there as well. So constantly promoting different opportunities for students to gain access to workshops and resources along the way.
Nice.
Thanks for joining us, Steph.
Steph, thanks for being here.
Thank you so much for having me.
And our student interview today is OSU student athlete Anagret Asi. Anagret is an international student from Tartu, Estonia, and she's the starting guard for the OSU Cowgirls basketball team. Before joining OSU, she played briefly for the Arizona Wildcats. She's a senior sports media major who started all 30 games last year and shot 43% from the floor, averaging nearly 13 points per game. She also earned an honorable mention Big 12 status last year. Anagret, thanks for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
Fanboying out completely here. This is my favorite interview of all time. Thank you so much for being on the show. Really excited. And congratulations to the start of the season. Y'all look healthy. It's a deep team. It's a lot of new faces. And I'm just really excited for you as the season progresses. So thanks for coming on the show.
Thank you.
Okay, so a couple questions for you just to get started so folks can kind of get to know you a little bit. As an international student, first of all, what are your Thanksgiving and winter breaks plans? Do you travel home? Do you stay here?
Yeah, we never get to travel home for any of our breaks except for the summer. But for Thanksgiving, we actually go to a Thanksgiving tournament in Daytona, Florida. We have two games there. It's usually for Thanksgiving, we usually do go for tournaments that are non-conference tournaments that you usually play other top teams in the country. Last year we went to the Bahamas.
I was going to say, early in the season y'all went last year. I remember that.
Yeah, and then the year before we went to Cancun, Mexico. So, we've been to places, and, this year we just are going to stay in the States.
I was going to say, does that feel like a little bit of a downgrade? Yeah,
it does feel like a little bit of a downgrade, but it's still going to be, super fun. And, I've never been to, a Florida. I mean, I've been to Florida, but, I haven't stayed there for more than 2 days or, more than just for one game. So it's going to be, an interesting experience.
Well, we'll definitely be watching 100%.
So does the team do, a Thanksgiving meal if you're traveling, or?
I can't actually remember.
Okay.
I think when we went to Mexico, then, yes, we did have some kind of Thanksgiving table dinner for, the whole tournament that we had at our resort. But last year, I honestly can't remember. I don't think we had anything.
Well, y'all have so much going on at those. You're traveling over there and getting ready for the games and stuff. So, well, I have a question for you. What are the biggest challenges? I mean, you're from Estonia. So what have been the biggest challenges for you coming to the U.S. here to play sports and to study?
It sounds maybe unusual of an answer, but having a new team every year because of the transfer portal. So just kind of recreating those relationships all the time and relearning your new teammates' playing styles, and it's just kind of hard to do every year, but that's just how it is right now, with the transfer portal and players moving in and out.
Yeah,
as they want, pretty much.
Yeah,
so.
Well, you could see last night that the coach was definitely playing with the rotations a lot, right? You had people coming in and out, just trying to figure out who gels with who. But you've obviously emerged and are a leader on the team. Any particular approach to what your leadership style is?
Not specifically. I've been trying to figure it out for a while. I know that I'm not the most vocal person, so me saying anything is most likely going to be, if I do say something, it's going to mean something. I'm not too much of just a yapper, like they say nowadays, or whatever. But I would say, like, more by example, like, okay. doing the things right, like, not cutting corners, not, like, just doing what he's asked.
Yeah, it definitely shows. Yeah. Absolutely shows. So, why basketball? What made you, how'd you get into basketball? How'd you start playing?
Yeah, so my mom actually is a basketball coach. She used to play, but then she, I think when she was like 24 or something, she tore pretty much everything in her knee.
I see.
So she had to retire from like playing, but she's just such a big basketball fanatic, so she just could not stay away. So that's what she was studying at a university at the same time too, like to be a basketball coach. So she just got into coaching, and when she had me, like, I just had always been around basketball.
Gotcha.
At first, I really didn't want to play basketball because, like, I was like, oh, my mom's doing it. Like, I want to do something else. But eventually, I just fell in love with
it.
So
what is the time difference between here and Estonia?
It's 8 hours.
Okay.
And how I usually calculate it with my mom is that if I'm here, I subtract 4 hours, and it's the opposite time of the day.
Okay.
Like, if it's nighttime for me, it's going to be morning for her.
So it's challenging if she wants to watch your game live.
Yeah. She's going to have to stay up for a while.
Yeah. Does she watch your game? Does she, like, offer, like, critiques or anything on how you play?
Yeah.
Oh,
she. Man. I usually get a pretty long text after each game, like, what went well, what didn't go well,
okay.
what to do next time, what to work on, whatever, like. I do get some
nice
feedback.
So Andrew says you've been riding around campus on a scooter. Is that your preferred mode of transportation? Those things are dangerous. You know that, right?
Yeah. So funny story. I was struggling with that injury for a while. So I prefer not walking. So I started out with a bike, and then my bike broke, and I was like, walking a lot, and I was like, okay, everybody's using these scooters, like, maybe I should get a scooter. So I just got a scooter last year, and it's been so nice, but this summer I actually finally got my license.
Okay.
So,
so now, cars in the future.
Now I have a car, and now I'm, like, driving my car way more than, like, actually, like, scooting around, but, like, getting to class from, like, GIA and stuff, like, it's more convenient to use a scooter, so yeah, I do use.
But
scooter.
It's an electric scooter, like
yeah.
Like so, in your opinion, what makes a quality scooter?
Good brakes.
Okay, that's a great one. Yeah, we have one of our graduate students from Bangladesh. She just got a scooter, and I was like, listen, make sure that thing stops, right? Like that's a really you gotta have the brakes. Okay, so just checking through on the questions here. So new team, you talked about like all the new faces in the transfer portal and stuff. And just, you know, you can see in the early games that y'all are definitely playing with rotations and figuring out what works. So what do you hope to accomplish with this team? A lot of depth on the team. What do you hope to accomplish as a team and as an individual player? Like, what does success look like this year for y'all?
I believe that we can make it to the NCAA tournament.
Nice.
And win there, too.
Nice.
Like, not just be one and done or whatever. Like, I truly believe that, like, once we figure things out completely, like, we're going to be really good.
Y'all look really good.
Yeah.
The talent, the shooting is lights out. I mean, from so many different places you can get offense now. And, you know, you move into the two and having Alexia at the one lets you get the up and down the floor a lot better. I'm really excited as well.
Yeah.
So I think that's a great goal.
That's
fantastic. So what about after the season? What's next for you? Are you going to try to play pro ball?
Yeah, planning on going back to Europe.
Okay.
Not my hometown or like not home country because we don't have like a professional league, but somewhere in Europe probably is what I'm aiming for. We'll see what type of deals I'll be offered. But
okay. What's the difference between like the process of going to play for Europe versus playing for the WNBA? Is there a difference in terms of like the way that you put yourself out there for that? Like, how does that work?
I think I'm not too familiar with it. Because, like, I've never been a person that's like, oh, I want to make it to the WNBA. Like, that's never been my goal. Like, obviously, if the opportunity arises, then, like, I'm going to grab onto it. But,
okay.
like, I've never, like, been chasing for that, if that makes sense. So I'm not like too familiar with it, but as much as I've heard, it's like you got training camps and you got 12 spots on the roster, and like you just have 144 spots for.
Gotcha. So you go to like an exhibition, you sort of try out.
Yeah.
They bring you in. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
But in Europe, it's kind of like you have an agency, they have a highlight clip of you, like show it around for whatever clubs they have good contacts with and like trust and stuff, and then whoever's going to be interested, like you're going to have so many different options from so many different levels in so many different countries, so it's kind of like more open and more like I'm going to have more opportunities
Yeah. Well, I'm excited for this season a lot, and then excited to see what happens as you get and the success that you had this year as a team and how that translates for you over. So we're going to show a little clip. This is from last season. We were at this game, and dude, we lost our minds at this. We lost our minds over this. So this is the half court shot. And if you haven't seen this, if you're listening in during the West Virginia game, it was just an amazing night. So first off, awesome shot. But we want you to talk us through sort of like what happens here and what's going through your head.
Yeah. So.
I see from behind half court. What a shot by Anna.
Obviously.
That's such a great shot.
Obviously, there was like, 5 seconds left when we inbounded. We had a timeout, right? A little bit before that, saying that we want to go into the halftime leading by 8 or something. Mm. We had free throws, and then we had a defensive possession, and then we had this shot. And I was kind of like, just, I got to get it off. Like, I need to get it off and just throw it somewhere in that direction. And like, it's so far. Like, I never like even like when we take trick shots and stuff in practice or like shoot arounds, usually we end our pregame shoot arounds with a trick shot. And the furthest usually is like the half court shot. So like, we never practice from that far. So I just like put everything I had in it and just was one of those nights,
I mean,
I guess.
We were talking about that like for the whole week afterwards. I was talking about this shot. It was really
that look on your look
face,
on your face, and then Langerman comes up with
the chest bump. The chest bump was really awesome.
Well, it was kind of cool. We had both invited our classes to come that day. We said, "We'll buy your tickets. Come with us." I had like 2 students. Sky had like 4 or 5 students.
Yeah, Ollie Gordon even showed up for that.
Yeah, Ollie Gordon was there.
Yeah.
But I remember the next day I started my class in the morning because I was like, only 2 of you showed up, and I planned it at the start of my class, and I was like, you missed it. Next time I invite you to a game, you should come. Well, like, how did it feel that moment?
It was kind of surreal, actually, like, because when the ball was in air, it was like either going to the right or left, like it was going to one side, and like it literally like swerved back. So I was like, at first I was like, well, that's just gonna go be an air ball, and then it just starts going back, and I'm like, whoa, that might actually go in. And then it went in, and I'm like, oh my gosh, that's crazy.
What,
like,
did your mom text you the next day?
Oh my god, I don't remember. I don't remember, actually.
I think anytime your mom says anything like negative, you just text her that. Just text her a clip of that. Yeah, right? Like, wait, did you forget about
have
this
that
one?
On. Yeah. Have that ready so you can just text it.
Yeah.
But let me ask, do you have a philosophy about the half court? Like, do you say just do it, or do you say it's not worth the risk to your percentage, your stats?
Oh, no, I always take it if I can.
Okay.
Like, if it's reasonable and like I will have enough time to get it off, like, I'm gonna go try to get it off.
Yeah,
because like you never know.
Can't not try.
Yeah.
Yeah, I really like that you didn't have like memorized all your stats and stuff, that you're just out there playing ball.
Yeah.
I really dig that. Y'all ran a play, not quite like the half court shot, but y'all ran a play last night out of a off of a set off when they were pressing. I think Staley threw that inbound. There was a play the night last night. That was a great play. I love seeing that speed.
Yeah.
That was really clever. I thought that was a cool play.
Yeah.
So what about some day-to-day challenges of being a student athlete that, you know, this is a faculty-oriented podcast. What are some of the challenges that you face that other people might not understand? Does being an international student affect any of those challenges? What's it like for you, just the grind of it all?
probably loneliness is something that comes and goes depending on the period of time and how the team's doing and everything like that. Kind of like, I would say the biggest struggle, like for me personally, like not having family near to like turn to, and like I said, having new teammates every year, like kind of switching it up. And like last year I lost a couple of my better friends from the team. So it's kind of like been a hard turnaround for me personally. So I would just say, like, from that point of view, like just not having your people around all the time.
Yeah.
And nobody to like physically turn to, I would say. But I mean, I can always call home and like not feel that alone.
Yeah.
But it's more like the emotional connectivity with like the close ones that like actually know you.
Yeah, you know, you say that. We have, again, we have a lot of international students in our program. That's something that a few of them have talked with me about. Like, they feel sometimes like they're lonely, but I can't even imagine like all the traveling that y'all do, all of the demands of it all. And then, like you say, people coming and going and leaving. You'll get to see Lior goes on, though she's playing for Colorado now, so you all get to play, at least have a game against each other. So, okay, so I want to ask you just a sort of last question here before we get to the other segment. You know, what can the listeners do of the podcast to support women's basketball here at OSU? Support the women on the team, or their, you know, is there NLI merch? Like, what can we do as a faculty to support women's basketball?
I mean, the easiest thing I feel like is to come to the games. Mm. We appreciate that over everything. Just to see people be interested in our team and how we do. And I feel like once you like come there, you're gonna want to come back.
Yeah.
Like, it's just like the first step of like,
it's almost like going to the gym in general,
like, you might not want to go there, but like once you go there, you feel good.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah, no, I like it.
And
it's a great product. I mean, y'all are really good and really talented. And women's basketball has really taken off. I mean, last year was like the benchmark year for it, and I think y'all represent that so well as a team.
All right, so we're gonna bring the podcast to a close with a new segment called Odd Names. Now, it's no secret that Coach J.C. Hoyt is expecting. So Sky and I, we've put our heads together, and we've compiled a list of odd baby names. Mm-hmm. Okay? So what we're going to ask you today is I'm going to ask you to rate these names on a scale of 1 to 10, with 10 being brilliant and 1 being completely cringe. Okay?
Okay.
All right.
So just list them in order. 1 is your highest ranked name. 10 will be your lowest ranked name for these. And we'll read them out loud so that everybody can see this. And by the way, we got to get those J.C. Hoyt shirts where she's got that shoe as the phone. I was trying to get that all last year. Nobody would give us that. They would not sell me that shirt. It had to be a part of some kind of club. I actually texted them about it. Anyway,
We tried to go as gender neutral as possible.
Yes.
But not all of them. The first name is... Dribble.
First name's Dribble. Okay, so think about that.
I kind of like it, actually. Like, if he was a boy, I would... That's low-key like a cool name.
Not too bad?
But she's expecting a girl, so...
Okay, well...
I would... I'm going to have to go with 7.
Okay.
I'm going with 7.
Okay. What about Swish? That's name number 2. Swish.
Probably a 6.
Okay.
I think... Yeah, I'll go with 6 for that.
Okay. Name number 3 is Jumper. You don't love that one. I can see on your face that that's not your favorite.
Probably a 9. I'm going with a 9.
She did like that one. Okay.
What about Gallagher? How are you feeling about Gallagher? It's tough for a girl. It'd be a tough girl name.
I could see it happening. And for those who are listening don't know it, they play in Gallagher.
Yes.
I will put it at 3.
Okay, all right. All right. What about Iba?
A 10.
Well, that's at least, Okay, now I eat about...
Oh, we're going like that? I thought we were going to go like 10
fine.
Is
yeah,
the best.
That's, we'll go 10 is the best.
10 is the best?
Yeah, let's go like
that. Okay, okay.
What about Jersey?
This has to be like a 2.
I like Jersey. There's nothing wrong with Jersey.
What other ones do you have? You've got
Alley Oop.
That's kind of cute, actually.
That is low-key cute. That could be like a nickname or something.
Alley Oop. Oh, man.
I'm going to go 8 for that one.
Schwab. I eat about, I don't know, 3 Schwab dogs a game.
It's one of the best parts of going to basketball games.
I don't even know what it is. I don't even know what it is.
The Oklahoma brand hot dogs. They sell them all over the stadium.
Schwab dogs.
Schwab dogs. They don't even call them hot dogs.
I'm going to put it at 4. I'm going to put it at 4.
All right. Well, I know we're expecting a girl, but what about Brahm?
Brahm.
Big sponsor. Brahms.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Brahms.
I love that place.
How can you not?
Yeah.
Good ice. Send the checks.
Yeah, the froyo is crazy. Crazy good. I'll put it 5.
Okay. All right. What about dimes?
I mean, and one is definitely my least favorite, so I'm going to have to go and one as one, and dimes has to go at, what, 8? No. What do I have left? I have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5... 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. We all have 11 here, I think.
Yeah, there's one extra one. But I will say that I was joking.
And one is the extra one.
I thought and one was so incredibly clever just because you're adding the baby.
Yeah, so, okay, dimes has to go as one, and one is going at one.
Okay,
as well.
So your highest ranked one is Iba.
Yeah.
All right, nice. So we've got Iba, Jumper, and Alley Oop, those are your top 3. I really like Alley Oop. I think that's a lot of fun, too.
Yeah.
All right. Anagret Asi, thank you so much for taking the time. Thank you for being here. And thank you for being an incredible representative for the university and for women's basketball.
Thank you for having me.
The Odd Fellows is a production of Oklahoma State's College of Arts and Sciences. It's edited by Danny Catula with production support from Keith Maddox. If you have questions or you'd like to discuss your research, you can contact us at oddfellows@okstate.edu. Until next time, go Pokes.